The Jen, Gabe, and Chewy podcast is sponsored by Celsius Energy Drink, and I am here to tell you it makes a huge difference in my mornings. With a unique blend of essential energy and key vitamins, Celsius is your partner to an active lifestyle. My favorite, the peach vibe. Learn more at Celsius.com and pick up Celsius Energy Drinks today.
Come see what's brewing. Come see what the good times are. Come see what the brewers are.
One of my favorite times of the year, the month of October. And playoff baseball. Playoff baseball used to not be a thing. I understand it's been a thing now for, you know, 6 out of the last 7 years. I cannot wait for this stadium to be packed full of Brewers fans as they take on the Mets game one later today, 4:32. Again, catch it, 620 WTMJ, our sister station, will have all of the coverage of game one of this series. And, yeah, we are live at the ballpark, hanging out here, been having so much fun. Big thanks to Tom Hecht, Vice President, Consumer Experience, and, of course, Rick Schlesinger have already joined us. Rick Schlesinger, President, Business Operations here for the Brewers. They hooked us up with some cool swag. We've got the hat. We've got the pom-pom, Joshy. We got the, I mean, it's even got, you know, we're going crazy here. We're going crazy at AmFam Field.
I'd love to see you in the stands during the playoff game with that pom-pom, just waving it around in your gear.
Just waving it around. I think I like the pom-pom more than I like the rally towel.
How many bevvies before you start doing that at the game?
The pom-pom?
Zero?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I'd say zero, one,
yeah,
like
I mean,
a hot dog.
I was just doing it now, yeah. Like, okay. Although we did get a text. I didn't see who it was. I forget, 800-990-3776, asking if the beer stand was open yet. So, Ashton, if you happen to, you know, catch one, you know.
I'll go do some research. I can help you guys out
I'll take a Miller Lite, you know. I'll be hanging out.
A High Life or a Light?
Yeah, either one.
Okay, I got you. Josh, you want one?
If it's cold, I'll take one. So the Brewers have the playoffs. Packers, meanwhile, sitting there at 2-2, coming off their loss of the against the Minnesota Vikings. And I keep debating, and I talked about it yesterday, and I think KBN pushed back a little bit. At least Kyle told me he was going to push back, because I said the defense stinks right now. And I'm more talking about the front seven, Josh. Like, I have no problem with the secondary, even though the secondary gave up some big plays. Like, what the touchdown that Justin Jefferson had. Like, what else do you want Keyshawn Nixon to do there?
Right.
He had pretty good coverage. It was, you know, just Justin Jefferson made a play. I don't have any problem right now with the secondary.
I've got
a problem with the front seven.
I think the secondary thing, the depth issue is obviously apparent there, but at some point, your third and fourth best cornerbacks can only be so good across the league. That's just the general nature of the game. I do think it'll be interesting to see if we see sort of a phasing out or less snaps from Keyshawn Nixon. I thought he left quite a few on the play, save for the Justin Jefferson thing. That is what it is. He's one of the best players in football right now. I think stinks is a little strong for me, but I understand where you're coming from. The reason I'm not willing to go to stinks is I'm going to allow Jeff Hafley and the defense to grow a little bit more. But the front seven thing is a massive concern. And I don't think
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm more concerned about. Like, I'm throwing the secondary away because I think the secondary, again, it was your third and fourth corners going up against Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison.
Correct.
Right? I mean, there was only so much that they were going to be able to do. So that, you know what that means, Josh? Your front seven's got to step up.
Yeah.
And Jason mentioned it earlier. There is video out there on social media. You don't have to look very far. Of Rashawn Gary getting blocked one-on-one by a tight end.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that is the major point of concern for me. We all gave Rashawn Gary the year, and I would say I was one of the more willing to accept the disappearance from him because of the returning from the ACL. But now it's put up or shut up time. I believe if my memory serves me correct, I took down in my notes that I think they sent a chip Preston Smith's way and not Rashawn Gary's, which, if that's the case, that's a big problem to me. If you're highest paid guy, because Preston Smith, I think we all like and we think can be fine, but he's not the guy.
Look, not everybody can be an all-star, right? When you're paying the type of money that you pay for some guys, you know, not everybody is going to be an all-pro across, and he's a solid pro. He knows what he's doing.
Right.
I'm not expecting him to go out there and make 15 sacks.
Right. But he doesn't get hurt. and he knows his assignments and he plays them well. It's very valuable in the NFL to have those types of guys, because we've seen plenty of guys who aren't even capable of that. So unless Rashawn Gary is able to step up, Kenny Clark, and maybe a guy like Carl Brooks, J.J. Enagbare, it's really hard for me to figure out how the Packers are going to be able to really do anything. Maybe you get more exotic with running stunts, but that also puts you at trouble of giving up big rushing plays if it plays right into it. So there's all sorts of things that I think are worth concern. Stinks as far, but I have an eye on that front seven, because other than adding additional players, I don't know what the heck they're supposed to do.
Getting blocked one-on-one by a tight end is stinky.
Yeah. Oh, that.
We agree? Can we reach across the aisle and shake hands and agree on that?
I am shaking towards the camera right now.
Okay, we are shaking.
Yes, that can't happen. That can't happen to a degree where you need to be beating even the best of tackles in the league a couple times a game.
I'm not expecting you to win every time, because the guy across from you wins. But
and he's getting paid a lot too.
Yeah, but you got to win some.
Mm-hmm.
You got to win some. And the lack of pressure that they get by rushing four, despite the investment that they've put in, I'm still willing to be patient on Lucas Van Ness, but at the same time, it's like, okay, bud.
Yeah.
Like, we got to start making a couple of splash plays here and there. Again, you don't have to go out there and get 13 sacks. We're not at that point. We knew you were a developmental project. You're going to sitting, kind of learning the way Rashawn Gary did. But Rashawn was, by the end of year two, Rashawn was starting to stand out, and then he had a pretty good year three before, you know, he ends up tearing the ACL. So I don't know where I stand on Lucas Van Ness. The linebacking situation, you know, in terms of, yes, you're going from a 4-3 to a 3-4. I guess I'm willing to give a little bit more grace there. But the more time passes, the more I'm wondering if Quay Walker's really the guy you want to be on the inside. Maybe he needs to be an outside linebacker and go sideline to side. I don't know. There's a lot of athleticism there that it just doesn't stand out as much as it should.
Yeah,
like they just don't have the players aren't good enough is what I'm kind of leaning towards. Like I just they're not going to magically get better, and I just don't know if they're good enough, because even if, Josh, they are transitioning to a new system, shouldn't they at least make a splash play here and there, stand out a little bit more than they have? Even if you're, okay, we're still learning, but we're good enough where every once in a while we're going to flash and shine through and you can see the potential.
Yeah, and it seems like the only splash plays other than the interceptions we've seen, which many of which have just been individual performances by Xavier McKinney and Jair Alexander, it seems like a lot of the pressure that's created or big plays is, frankly, Jeff Hafley. So that makes me optimistic. Like, he's dialed up some perfect pressures at the perfect time to get a big play, which I don't feel like I remember Joe Barry ever doing that at any point in his tenure in Green Bay.
Well, no, because he was just, hey, play your shell, keep everything in front.
Yeah.
Again, that's why I'm not this is not an indictment to me on Jeff Hafley.
No, not
it's
at all.
It's more of an indictment of, are these guys actually good enough to
be the
defense we want them to be?
I was interested because Quay Walker has obviously been a big focus. His draft stock is a large part, the amount he's on the field. People kind of do focus a lens on him. He actually graded out pretty well last week, which I'm not grinding the tape by any means, even less so than most people when it comes to the linebacker position.
Wait, so Quay graded out well against Minnesota?
Correct.
Okay, because he was their lowest graded defender against Tennessee.
Correct. So that at least gave me a little sign of optimism. I also wonder if, like, Edgerrin Cooper, who just seems to have a knack for always being around the ball, always being around happening.
He's someone, Josh, to me, that's popped a little bit more. He doesn't have the snap count that everybody else does. So, like, I'm excited about the potential there, because even though he's not on the field all the time, he seems to, like you said, be around the ball and kind of have that energy that you're looking for.
Yeah, I wonder sort of, you know, if sort of switching guys out. I mentioned Keyshawn Nixon, Evan Williams. It's still got a ways to go there, but he's made splash plays, especially in camp. And then you've got the Edgerrin Cooper thing. So I think if you kind of improve people around them and make them more secure, maybe that helps Quay Walker. Maybe Edgerrin Cooper being out there with Quay Walker the most kind of, you know, lift all boats type situation that we could get in there. I do think this defense isn't nearly at its final form in its personnel and in the type of things Jeff Hafley can do and trust those guys to perform, you know, to execute the things he is calling. There is hope here, but the front seven is one thing I'm going to keep looking at until Rashawn Gary starts getting sacks. It's basically him at this point.
I was about to say, is it just comes down to Rashawn? Like, he's the highest paid defender.
Yes.
He needs to be getting in.
I think it's that simple, right? Isn't it? Like, we can try and talk ourselves into all sorts of things with that pass rush, but the guy who's paid to be the pass rusher has to do it.
I don't want to make any more excuses for Rashawn.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't want to make any more excuses for Rashawn. And it feels like we as a fan base are willing to give him every excuse.
Yeah.
Even when he wasn't getting sacks, well, his pressure rate's really high. Well, but we're paying him like one of the elite pass rushers.
Yeah, the pressure rate's down too now.
Do the Cleveland Browns fans go, oh, man, Myles Garrett, you should really see his pressure rates.
Yes.
No, you look at his sacks. T.J. Watt's winning Defensive Player of the Year not because of his pressure rate. Aiden Hutchinson is a game wrecker because he actually gets home and gets the sacks. Yes, the pressures are great, and they're an indication that you're doing a lot of good things. But at the end of the day, what you get paid for is the sack, because that's the thing that disrupts the offense the most.
Yeah, we've tried to this has been a long fight of mine, one of the many pet projects I have as a football fan.
I love Joshy pet projects.
I think QB wins matter, and everybody saying they don't is doing something there to kind of make themselves feel better. And pressures don't matter unless you're getting sacks. How many times have we seen just this year people get out of pressures and make incredible throws? Sure, it's an indicator, and it can be a sign. Like, a guy getting a ton of pressure is obviously doing more good than bad, but converting the sack ends drives most often. It ends that drive they're on. Either they have to punt or they're stuck with a field goal. Getting to the quarterback and bringing them down is worth so much more than just making them escape the pocket. And we can't ignore the fact that Rashawn Gary, frankly, doesn't have a great bend. His pass rush moves are much bull rush. He's going to overpower the guy, go through him. Like, Aiden Hutchinson isn't the most, like, bendy of athletes, but he's relentless, and he's always getting after the quarterback, and he's doing it a lot of times just going through the face of the guy in front of him. And I'm not going to say Rashawn Gary isn't giving the right effort or anything, but there's ways to get home without, you know, having the skills of a Myles Garrett or T.J. Watt, who can kind of just, like, get under somebody if they need to and get around him.
Yes.
There's ways to do it, and you have to bring the quarterback down. Making him escape the pocket isn't enough. It's bringing him to the ground.
Got to make those plays. We are going to continue to talk about the Brewers. Josh Maurer, Brewers broadcaster, going to be joining us next. But you can get a weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks straight from a fan favorite and Bucks legend. Tune into Hear District with Marcus Johnson of Bucks Plus Audio Production. Marcus and his son Chris, a 1995 UCLA hoops champ himself, talk about everything happening in the Bucks world and are joined by some of the biggest names in basketball. Plus, they'll answer your questions too. Stay on the beat of the Bucks and find Hear District now, Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Do you like your pickles warm or cold?
Want my pickle a little warm.
Warm's good.
It's better than cold.
Cold you can be
shrinkage.
Good, too.
Yeah, well, no.
Cold
shrinkage
can
gets
be
involved.
Good.
It's not great.
On 94.5 ESPN.
I feel like we're the last ones standing. Like, there was TV here, the racing sausages. I saw Bernie. I think Barrel Man was around. Ballpark even starting to clear out now. But we are hanging out at American Family Field ahead of Brewers-Mets today, 4:32 first pitch. Again, catch it over on 620 WTMJ. Somebody you heard quite a bit on 620 WTMJ this summer, Josh Maurer, joining us. Josh, thanks so much for hanging out, being here, bud.
I love the Back to the Future rejoin.
So it is. It's for. I don't even know how we started this, why we do it, but every Tuesday on
Huey
our show,
Lewis.
Yeah, we celebrate Huey Lewis in the news. So it's a Hughes Day here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Love it.
So I've got me
fired up for the appearance.
We've asked. We asked Rick Schlesinger this. We asked Tom Heck this. What moments from the 2024 season do you think defines this Brewers team?
Boy, that's a great question. The moment that defines the season. Well, I,
It not necessarily defines the season or the team or however you want to interpret it.
Yeah, I guess the day that I'll remember the most, and that I think most people would say would be a couple of Wednesdays ago when they clinched the division against the Phillies, and they actually had clinched
earlier
the Central Division earlier in the day with the Cubs loss, but then came out, played a great game, won on a walk-off, and got to celebrate as if they had clinched because they won the ballgame themselves. I think that'll be the most memorable day from what happened this year. But there have been so many moments throughout the season that led to that. I think back to an early game in May in Kansas City where the Brewers are down in the ninth inning and down to a last strike, and Willie Adames hits a three-run home run that wins the game against a Royals team that turned out to be really good.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was one of my first inklings that this team might have something special to it. I mean, let's just go back, actually, to the very, very beginning, the first three games of the season back in late March, 6 months ago, were against the Mets. And they start out against David Stern's team. It was David Stern's first games as the Mets president of baseball mm-hmm. operations. And the Brewers swept them. And it made you think, wait a minute, everybody's talking about this is a Brewers team this year that might take a step back. Were we wrong in that assessment? And surely we were. And you started seeing that pretty early on. But the best thing about this team is that they never really had too low of a valley. They were the only team in Major League Baseball that never lost four games in a row the whole year. That's really hard to do. Over the course of 162 games, you're going to go into a funk for a week. But that never really happened with this team. And Pat Murphy did such a remarkable job at the helm. I think that's the biggest reason that things went the way that they did.
Well, you mentioned Murph, and he was still so new. And we talked to you, again, 6 months ago. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago when you joined us for opening day here. What stamp has he left on this team?
The biggest stamp, really. I think his fingerprints are all over everything that they've done. And for me, what Murph has done that has won him what should be a Manager of the Year award, he has molded a young group of players into guys that believe that they're the best team every night. And that's not easy to do because they're not always the best team. But they believe that they are. And they go out there and they think we should win every game that we play. And that's the way that they've competed. Do you win every game? No, but they won 93. And this is a team that was projected by most to have a losing record, winning fewer than 80. So I think the way that he instilled that confidence in this group, making them believe that, hey, this is our division, even though the prognosticators didn't think that it should be, they believe that it should be.
Josh Maurer, Brewers broadcaster, joining us here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. So this is the Chewy. I mean, Chewy's gone. He's overseas and in Greece. So this is the Chewy honorary question. I feel like he's asked everybody this that has had something to do with baseball that's joined. What did the experts get so wrong? How did they get it so wrong about this Brewers team? Because, again, the one I always rely upon is I did a show on ESPN Radio with Buster Olney around the All-Star break. And he said, Gabe, I owe the entire city of Milwaukee an apology because I said that any one of those teams in the National League Central can win that division, except for the Brewers. Hmm. And they were the first team to win their division in all of Major League Baseball.
And it was never really even in question, to be honest with you.
That was the All-Star break. They had like a 6 or 7 game lead at that point.
Yeah. Well, and you kept waiting and hoping this wouldn't happen, but you kept waiting for it to tighten up the divisional mm-hmm. race, and it never did. What did they get wrong? Well, I think they underestimated the ability of the Brewers to adapt to a different style of baseball. The way that they played this year, the aggressiveness on the base paths, the chasing runs without hitting a lot of home runs, that was certainly a big part of it. The offense was actually more prolific this season than it was last year.
Oh, yeah.
And they lost some names from last year, and they only had a healthy Christian Yelich for about 40-45% of this season. The other thing that they got wrong is I don't know that people realized how special some of these young guys, especially Jackson Churio, were going to be immediately. And after 2 months of a little bit of struggling, Jackson Churio was one of the best players in baseball, not just one of the best rookies. But since June, Jackson Churio has been a top 15 player in the sport. And he's been batting at the top of the order, playing left field every day as a 20-year-old. And then again, I think there's that belief in the culture here that has helped this Brewers team be just a step or two above everybody else in the Central Division from day one.
Willie Adames said yesterday, the clubhouse, it just feels different. Something just feels different. As somebody who gets to be around the team as a broadcaster, does it feel different to you this year versus last year?
I think it does. And it's hard to put your finger on why. I guess it's easy to just say, well, there are different people. And there's going to be, when the rosters are set this morning, probably only around 10 players that were active for the wild card series last year against the Diamondbacks that'll be active for this series against the Mets this year. So that's a big change considering there'll be 26 active players only.
Yeah.
10 of them are going to be the same guys. So people are different. But I think Pat Murphy being in charge has made it feel a little bit different. Yeah, it is. It's hard to put your finger on it. But there is a swagger to this team. It's almost like Gabe... They don't know what they don't know.
Well, no, but that's to me, you know, when you have a young, youthful team, it can go one of two ways, you know, that they can realize, oh, this is the big leagues. This is a lot of times when you're Jackson Churio and you're 20 years old, I mean, how long has he been like the best player on his team? Like everywhere he's gone, he's always been the best player on his team. And yes, I guess it took him a couple of months to, oh, I'm at the big leagues, but he just kind of found that, oh, yeah. It's just baseball. I'm really good at baseball. And as you mentioned, the last 4 months, he's been one of the top players in the sport.
I can't wait to watch him in the postseason because I get the feeling, being around Jackson and watching the way that he's gone about his business the entire year, I get the feeling that he's even got another level, an extra gear that he can move it into in the postseason when the lights are brighter and there's national television every game. The eyes of the sport are watching. I have a feeling that Jackson's going to do something really special here in October, and hopefully it starts here today.
Who's the unsung hero of the 2024 Brewers?
I'm not going to give you one. I'm going to give you a couple.
Okay. That's why I want, because it's a tough question, because it feels like everybody's had their moments at different points.
Yeah, I want to start with Trevor McGill. Trevor McGill, for more than half of the season, was the team closer. He had never had a save in his major league career until this year. And then all of a sudden, he became one of the better closers in baseball while he held the role for Devin Williams until Devin came back. And as many close games as the Brewers played, especially early in the year, it felt like every game was a one or a two-run game. Trevor McGill was the biggest reason, I thought, early in the year that the team was in first place. His emergence as the closer that was able to hold down the fort. So there's one. Starting pitching, there have been a cavalcade of guys. what is it, 16 different guys started the game this year. But Colin Ray, who didn't end the season, I know, the way that he wanted to, perhaps ran out of gas a little bit in the final month. But Colin was such a rock. He did, every time the Brewers handed him the ball, he gave the team a chance to win just about. And that's the biggest thing. At the end of the day, do you win the game? And for most of the season, when Colin pitched, the Brewers won like 75% of those games. He didn't always get those wins, but he gave you the opportunity to win. So of the starting rotation, I'd give Colin the nod. And, you know, Rhys Hoskins' numbers aren't gaudy.
Yeah.
The batting average is around 200. But he hit 26 home runs, and I can't tell you guys how important the leadership was to this team that Rhys brought. Pat Murphy uses the term pillar. We have pillars here in this team, and Christian Yelich is one, and Willie Adames is one. And Rhys Hoskins' addition as one of those important pillars of the club, I can't underestimate how important that was to have him on this team this year. And by the way, I know, he batted whatever it was, 215. But the hits that he got, they always seem to be impactful.
Well, he's been a Mets killer just about his entire career. And, well, the Mets are going to be playing here against the Brewers later today at 4:32. So hopefully he continues that for the Brewers into the postseason. Josh, thank you so much for the time, bud. Thanks for getting up early. Thanks for jumping on.
You bet, Gabe. Good having you guys here. It's going to be a fun day.
Oh, should be a great day. Josh Maurer, Brewers broadcaster, joining us here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. How worried are we about the kicking situation in Green Bay? We dive into that next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Big hurt.
I heard that's like, eh.
Ron and the Keywagon say you guys should slow down before you take on a sponsor.
Here I am.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Somebody
ballpark. What they're giving. Both the only people working right now are the grounds crew, getting this field in the immaculate condition that it's going to be for the 4:32 first pitch, Brewers-Mets. Again, listen to that game, 620 WTMJ, our sister station. Josh, before we get to more Brewers stuff, I feel that we do have to address. Here is what Matt LaFleur yesterday had to say about the Packers kicking situation, because that is, I think, of my friends, of all the texts that I have received between Sunday and today, have been, okay, what's going on with the kicking situation? Can we get it better? And, well, here's what Matt LaFleur had to say yesterday.
Well, we see it in practice every day. You got to go perform, and we expect them to make those kicks as well. So we've got to make sure that we get that production and make sure that his routine is right, and he's got to be able to self-correct as well. You know, if you miss one, you got to make sure that you don't make the same mistake twice.
Well, and that's the one thing Jason has pointed out, Josh, is that the kicks, I think maybe Rob pointed this out yesterday when he joined us, all of his misses have been to the same side. It's not like he's got the two-way miss going. So maybe that gives the Packers hope that he can get it corrected, because they did not work out a kicker yesterday, and I don't think they're going to be working out a kicker today. I think Narveson's going to be the guy, it appears, going forward.
It certainly seems that way to me, and things could change today, but I even think working people out is not necessarily going to mean there's going to be a change overnight.
Correct.
And Sunday there's going to be a new kicker. I'm discouraged by what they're saying, and let's be honest, they're saying the right things. You're not going to go out there and blast your kicker. They did say, hey, you have to make kicks, and it's that simple. Kicking is one of those things where I feel like you should be able to see the traits that are necessary, find them, and, you know, you can stick with guys. The Packers famously stuck with Mason Crosby, but this guy came in out of nowhere. He doesn't have NFL experience before the experience the Packers gave him kicking in real NFL games. And Greg Joseph made 5 kicks in a single game for the Giants. I think Goody and Rich Bisaccia should be able to, even though he didn't run away with that kicking competition, if you can't see the traits and the things there that would delineate and make a guy a better investment than the other, then that's like on the whole operation. What are you guys looking for, and why is it wrong? Because now Anders Carlson isn't here. He was a draft pick. Then Greg Joseph got brought in to be the competition and has moved on and been a damn good kicker for them in New York. Now, obviously, that could fall off a cliff here, but kicking has gotten to a point now where the Packers are so far and away behind everyone else in the league.
They're the only ones who have missed a field goal under 40 yards in 4 weeks.
At what point are you saying whatever we're doing here is wrong and we need to invest in fixing it? Because as much as I dismiss specialists, largely a lot of that led by the other co-host of this show, Chewy, people seem to be able to find kickers who are at least competent, and the Packers have struggled to do that in 2 consecutive years now. What are you guys doing wrong? Fix it. Change it. Do something.
I loved Rob's idea yesterday of having, like, a kicking coach.
We had a caller ask for that same thing as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, to Rob's point, if you happen to miss the show, go back and listen to it on Wisconsin On Demand. Like, I mean, special teams coaches aren't necessarily coaching you how to kick the ball, how to,
right,
you know, if you're a punter or a kicker. They're doing kind of the schematic things and the rah-rah things that you have to do on the return packages and the coverage packages. But, you know, if Tom Clements is working on Jordan Love's mechanics or getting Malik Willis in his mechanics right, why can't you have a kick? You're investing money in kickers, and yes, are they real football players? I mean, you can decide. You know, obviously, Chewy doesn't think that they are. But they're still incredibly important because they're one of the few positions that score points, and those points end up mattering. They have to figure this out. And going back to something that Goody said when they had Mason Crosby, you can't be a championship team without a championship kicker. And right now, the Packers do not have a championship kicker.
They don't even have a make the playoffs level kicker. Now, I think they've probably they'll probably be able to make the playoffs without a super good kicker. And I'm not even willing to blame all that much of the last week's loss on the kicking. I think that
changes
the course of the game and
when he missed. It's not like he missed a game winning kick.
Right. But I do think that's coming.
He missed kicks in the
first half. At this point, in a close game, they're not going to send him out there with any sort of confidence, and that's going to cause Matt LaFleur to probably make some poor decisions on fourth down and not take the points where they would be assumed by most other teams in the league as givens.
Well, I don't know if it's a bad decision if you don't trust your kicker, Josh, but let me ask you this.
Right.
And hopefully it doesn't come down to this, but, you know, this weekend in Los Angeles, would you rather have Narvison kick and Packers are down two? Would you rather have him kick a 40-yard field goal, or would you rather have to win the game or the Packers go for it from the 23-yard line and try to score a touchdown?
I have no confidence in him to make that kick, but if he misses it, maybe that will force their hand to change.
Okay.
So send him out there because a result is going to happen, and either it's going to improve our confidence or the Packers are going to have no choice other than to move on from him. Because if he is single-handedly game on the line, causes them to lose a game, I don't think he can make it back the following Sunday. It just doesn't seem to make sense.
Tough. That would be tough. We are at the ballpark, and Brewers COO Marty Ronski going to be joining us next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
There's two things she counts in the house. One of the pictures. What do you think the other one is?
Firearms.
Viagra.
On 94.5 ESPN.
From American Family Field, Brewers Mets happening 4:32 later today as we are joined by Brewers COO Marty Ronski, saving our best interview for last here.
That's
on
right.
Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. I love the energy you come with, Marty. I mean, it's going to be a long day at the ballpark. What are you most excited about?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know where I would start. I'm most excited for a win.
Okay.
I mean, we're going to have that moment today.
All right.
I'm feeling it. I'm calling it. We're all superstitious around here, but I'm doing it anyway. So I'm most excited for the win, but actually it's the hum. You know, we're out here right now, such a quiet park. Right now the lawnmower has just started up in the last
sun's
half
peeking
hour.
Through.
Right, the whole thing, little breeze, but really, like, we have the best seats in the house right now. But as the day goes on and that swirl happens and the fans start to arrive and the guys are doing their warm-ups and workout, those moments as you just watch sort of everything crescendo is unbelievable.
What do you think this team has been able to do to really connect with the community and city of Milwaukee? Because, again, I'm still marveling, and we saw you out there when we were doing the show just a week and a half ago. The drive-through tailgate was unbelievable. That many people showing up, you know, to get the QR code and the flags and the brats at 5 o'clock in the morning. Why does this team resonate so much with the city of Milwaukee?
Yeah, you know, it's really been an incredible, special thing, and I think you can never predict it in advance, which is what in part makes it so special. But I think Murph came out this year and he was ready to lead in a different way, and he had a group of guys who are young and hungry, and frankly they're, you know, you hear about this all the time, the chemistry in the clubhouse, right?
Yeah.
It's a real thing, undoubtedly, and there's just a really special chemistry. These guys are hungry, they're out to prove something, and clearly they're having fun. So there's this really interesting combination of perhaps a combination of all the cliches and the things we always hear about what makes magic, but that's really what it is. And I think what they bring to the table resonates with Wisconsin. It's very that sort of grit, that hard work, that we're doing what it takes to win tonight, as Murph would say. But I think all those forces coming together. And look, I've had this amazing seat to watch all of this from the front office and let these guys, I mean, it's a dream, right, to have a team that the fans really want to support, really want to come out and see. To your point, we had cars lined up onto the highway. I was like, people were like, oh, no, we're going to cause. I'm like, I really hope we cause a big traffic jam on the highway this morning. I'll let other people worry about that. That would be, like, the most amazing thing. And we did. You know, we're opening up multiple lanes. But, they're just bring that little extra intangible.
Brewers COO Marty Ronski joining us here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. What's been your favorite moment of the season?
let's think. You know, I think, honestly, I'm going to go all the way back to Murph's first press conference here with Ricky. And he said something, and people kind of looked at each other. I was in the room, and they were sort of – but he said, look, this is going to be about love and discipline. And I actually think it was like, you know, the cover of the newspaper, the sports section at least, right after that. And people kind of wondered and watched. But I tend to be a person who takes things in things like that. It's a leader telling you how they're going to lead their group. And I think that moment told us so much about what Murph was going to bring to the table. You know, this big kind of burly guy, this gruff leader who was going to bring love and discipline right into a group of unbelievable professional athletes. And how he's managed to do that has just been so prophetic. So I think that was my favorite moment. I knew something special was going to happen, and we've just seen it happen since.
Willie Adames said yesterday in the clubhouse, they can feel it. It just feels different as they start to open the roof, which is really cool, and I got distracted. but Willie Adames yesterday said in the clubhouse, it feels different. Do you feel that different all the way up in the front office?
You know, I think we have to. The answer is absolutely yes. And I think it's, you know, people are like, what is it exactly? And you know what's extra special when you can't put your finger on, right?
Yeah.
I've been around
a long time. Because if you could put your finger on it, you could replicate it.
Right, that you could replicate it. Other teams could replicate it, right? And frankly, we would have done it by now over and over. But when you can't put your finger on it, I think it tells you that there's just something a little bit different. You don't want to be able to put your finger on it. But I think, too, the fans can feel it because we've watched this team now. You never count them out. There's never a game where you're like, eh, right? I mean, when you're coming from behind, you know, in late innings in a game and really pulling it off like, hey, we meant to do that, you know, the entire time. It's just the adjustments that you're seeing, the way that the guys are showing up when we really need them to has been unbelievable.
Well, I mean, we were talking with Rick, and he said his favorite moment, or the moment that he thinks defines this team, was just a couple of weeks, or a week or so ago, down 8-0. Coming all the way back and winning that game. And that ended up being so important because that kept, ultimately, the Diamondbacks out of the postseason.
Absolutely. We were talking about that pivotal moment a little while ago as well. You know, you could probably pick a couple, but truly, look where the D-backs are now. That one game made such a difference. And what I loved about that game, I was here watching, and what I loved so much was the fans were still here. We are down so far, and man, did those fans get a show late in that game, right? But again, I do think that tells all of us, it told the guys, it reminded the guys, we're tired, it's late in the season, but we got to keep bringing it for everybody, and look at what a difference it makes.
I'm excited. I think one of the most things I'm excited for is we talk with Marty Ronsky, COO of the Brewers here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. I'm excited for Jackson Chourio. I want to see what he can do now in the playoffs, because what he has done over the last 4 months has been unbelievable. I mean, we... To hear about somebody, oh, he's coming through the system, he's coming. And then for him to deliver the way he has as a rookie, 2020 season, as a 20-year-old, hasn't been done before. I can't wait to see what he does in the playoffs.
It's so special. You almost want to look the other way, right? You almost want to pretend like it's not, like, I don't know, not yet, not right. But it's been so special. He's so special. You know, I ran into him in the out in the hallway during morning coffee that these guys get once in a while. He's never short on a, hey, good morning, hello. It's really who he is. And, you know, so many hats off to the many layers of scouts and front office and ownership that identified Jackson and brought him out here. But the guys have just enveloped him so completely. And he leads in that sort of unbelievable way, too, just by example. But, yeah, you talk about a dream. Let's hope it's a very long one. He's amazing.
I asked Josh this, Brewers broadcaster Josh Maurer, when he joined us. Who do you think has been the unsung hero of the Brewers this year? There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
And I think that's why it's a good
question.
There's
a lot of them. But I guess I will say this. I think Rhys Hoskins, from moment one, when he did the crybaby, right? I mean, like,
we celebrated that, like, that was joyfully on the show.
Right. And it set a tone. It set a tone that was a great contrast to Murph with his love and discipline. And you carry that forward when Rhys is really doing his thing out there. It's, I mean, go back and look. When Rhys is doing his thing out there, there's something extra special. I just think he gives that lift.
Marty, we appreciate the time. Enjoy today. It's going to be a fun
thanks,
day.
Thanks, you guys. Go Brewers.
Oh, the sun is shining down with the roof open. Oh, I can't wait for playoff baseball later today. Hopefully you can't wait for Wilde and Tausch. They're coming up next, 94.5.